You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the Ute Talk podcast. As always, this is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports.
And Joseph Silverswag from Utah Rivals.
All right. And we're here to talk some Utes. But as always, we're going to hit our quick hitters, review the Pac-12, and then our Utah basketball Kyle Kuzma watch as usual. So, and then of course, you know, later in the show we'll obviously talk about Washington, the coaching decisions, what was good, maybe pull our moral victories down a little bit, and after that move on to Colorado, what to expect the rest of the season. Should we hashtag fire Witt, or is Troy Taylor maybe going to be the first OC in a while to make it past 1 year? We'll see. And then we're gonna top everything off with running Utes basketball, who played last night against Mississippi State. So let's get off to what happened in the Pac-12 last weekend.
First game was UCLA at USC. They play that one a little bit earlier because I'm not sure. USC plays somebody else next week. It just got messed up. But anyway, they played rivalry game, not on rivalry week. It was surprisingly good game. Everybody expected Ronald Jones just kind of control UCLA, which he did. He got over 100 yards. But UCLA's defense played pretty well, particularly in the red zone. Kept them from scoring too many points. But Jim Moore got himself fired. He can't lose every single game to your rival and keep your job, unless your name is Bronco Mendenhall or Galati Sataki, which gets fine. Don't worry about it. We'll win someday next year. Detmer effect.
Isn't it trust the process?
Yes.
Oh wait, no, that's us. That's Sixers. That's us. Or us. Yeah, sure.
A lot of teams.
Plenty.
Band of never get fired brothers. Okay. Then the next game was
Cal Stanford, which was another entertaining game that honestly, I didn't expect to be such. Stanford wins, I would think, as expected. And what was, you know, for a close game, it was a dud of a fourth quarter. No points scored.
It was boring is what it was.
I mean, ultimately, if you didn't see mine and Joseph's Twitter exchange, I was watching most of these games all at the same time. And I don't recall looking at that game very much because every time I looked up, it just wasn't progressing.
It's interesting to watch teams play Stanford because all you have to do is stop Bryce Love, but he's incredible. So what happens is they stop Bryce Love on 95% of plays, and he breaks free once, literally once, and as soon as he gets past the defensive line, he's gone. And they get a touchdown, 56-yard touchdown, that wound up being the difference in the game.
Well, and he did it to Utah as well.
Yep, same thing that happened to us. It happened to everybody they've beaten.
Still not going to win the Heisman either way, though.
No.
Which is, we could talk about some crotch hand gestures later if we really wanted to.
I think if Stanford was 10-1 or 11-0, I think he'd have a really good shot of winning. But they've lost too many games, which is a stupid limitation to place on your Heisman contenders because he has very little control over whether or not Stanford wins or loses the game. And he's clearly the most dynamic player in the country, but what are you going to do? Then there was Arizona State, visited Oregon State, whooped them just as everybody would expect. Really nice night for running back Demario Richard, who got 116 and three touchdowns. But all kind of buzz in the media is that Todd Graham's job is absolutely on the line. They take on Arizona. And the feeling is if he loses and Arizona State finishes 6-6, he's out. Whereas here for the Utes, I feel like people will be pretty happy with 6-6.
That's the goal, right? That's the expectation.
That's all that's left, right? Yeah. I mean, Vegas came out a 10.5-point favorite for the Utes. I think the general consensus of Utah's a better team this year, but really Jekyll and Hyde, so we'll
let's
see.
Let's talk about that a little later. Yeah. I have
anyway,
my
one
own
more
theory.
Game, Grant.
Yeah, so Oregon played Arizona in two of probably the most high-powered offenses as of late in the Pac-12, and Oregon ended up beating them by 20. It really came down to that fourth quarter, those two. I mean, it was close, back and forth. And then Oregon pulled away.
Yeah, it was a great game, especially the first half. It was really exciting to watch. Oregon found a way to stop Khalil Tate. And
it's pretty hard to do.
Yes, yes. And the only other team who stopped Khalil Tate is Utah, and they used the strategy of playing him before he was the starting quarterback, which was very effective, but unlikely to be replicable. But Justin Herbert is Oregon's quarterback, and he's amazing. He's really, really good. He's probably the best quarterback in the Pac-12. And he showed it. He had a really good game. Kuzma, yep. Watch. My boy Kuzma is having himself a rookie season. He put up 30 points against the Phoenix Suns on Friday. Incidentally, he had, I think it was dinner with Kobe Bryant on Thursday night, and then he shows up and he scores 30 because Kobe's just got magic powers. And,
oh, is that what it
yeah,
was?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a double-double with 30 and 10. I mean, shooting great from the line. He's getting to the line seven times in that game, for example. I mean, if you look at his game log, you know, in three of the last five, he's getting up there five or more times to the line, and that's a great representation of efficient basketball. Yeah, and that's sure. And you'll see the correlating point totals with getting to the line as well, you know, 20, 24, and 30. But yeah, great rookie year. Continuing to tell all of us naysayers that said he should stay another year that you were all wrong.
Yes,
so.
I'm pleased to note that I was on the right end of that argument. I kind of lucked out because he's having an amazing season. He's averaging over 20 points a game, 7.4 rebounds, assist and a half a steal. I mean, it's a great season for any basketball player, and for a rookie, I think that's particularly extraordinary. I have seen Lonzo Ball listed ahead of him on like rookie power ranking, which is just crazy. Lonzo Ball can't hit.
Well, we can just stop. I mean, he's not getting Rookie of the Year, nor is Ball. Regardless of what story his dad's plant about him still being amazing, it's Ben Simmons. I mean, it's going to be.
Yeah.
I think. Let's.
If you're paying any attention to the NBA at all, Ben Simmons is having just an unbelievable debut, and he deserves it, and that's fine. But Kyle Kuzma, also great.
Yes, he's been great. So let's move on to Washington. So what do you want to start with this? You want to start with the good, or you want to want me to go straight into the bad?
Let's get out of the way the timeout. Let's just say that timeout was probably ill-advised, although I appreciate Kyle Whittingham standing by it. He's not saying, oh, I don't know what I was thinking. He's saying, I wanted to win. I wanted to win the game, and I thought that was the best way.
I'm fine with that, but don't go prevent defense. Like, that was zone coverage, and Washington picked it apart. That's the problem. I was actually calming down after the loss, and then I decided to turn on postgame, and then I heard Whittingham say I was being aggressive, and I'm fine with the aggressiveness. It made that game very entertaining. It was the reason why it was close and why Utah was in the lead in the fourth quarter. But for him to say he was aggressive, and then whether it was him or Scally, whatever, to call prevent type defense, that is not being aggressive.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although I do want to say to remember that Jalen Johnson went down on like the second to last play of the tying touchdown drive when he's tackling that colossus of a tight end. I don't know how he brought him down, but he came up lame. And was not in the game, as far as I could tell.
As much as that is true, it's still concerning that you're aggressive yet doing prevent defense.
Right. That aggression has to propagate down through all of the strategic decisions you make so that you're not just being aggressive about calling a timeout, but you're also calling aggressive plays and having your players play in an aggressive fashion and not say, just don't get a penalty. Let them go.
That was my whole problem with the aggressiveness is because it wasn't. Yeah, you gave them a courtesy timeout and they won the game. That's my opinion. I appreciate that Whittingham is willing to own it because ultimately that cost them the game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the coaching decisions, which is what we've got written down to talk about, go further back. Like the drive before their touchdown where we decided that in our play calling, from what I remember, and maybe you can correct me if I was wrong, but for Utah to go, let's waste clock and run the ball to try to milk this game out, is in essence handing the game to Utah's biggest weakness. And
I don't think that's a fair characterization of the last drive.
I'm not saying the last drive.
I'm saying the drive before that,
where they went, I think they got one first down, but otherwise it was a lot of run. And our run game is our weakness. It's crazy to say that, but it is. You go that conservative. We were playing a certain way the whole game, and we were up a touchdown. And then we get to that drive, and we don't play that way.
Right. It's not about being conservative. It's not about being aggressive. It's about recognizing that you're winning a game because what you're doing is working,
and not sticking with that. Yeah, you got to stick with that.
It's the same argument I use in the red zone. I say, don't do new plays. Just do the same play that got you from the 30 to the 20. We'll get you from the 20 to the 10 and the 10 to the end zone. Just do the same thing because that works.
Totally.
So I think that's fair.
And so there's that. That drive really bothered me. I loved the defense. I mean, they scored a touchdown. Good for them. But the defense was like blitzing like crazy. Like we were putting crazy heat. And Browning was just crazy elusive and really smart and threw the ball away.
Mm-hmm. A game of inches, that third and 10, they did the blitz. Somehow Browning got the ball out. Donovan Thompson reaches out, touches six of his fingers. It's hard to go. And what's the natural instinct is that you start to parse all of the last six, seven, eight plays. And of course, that's not actually the way that something like this works. Every single play is equally important, but it sure doesn't feel that way when you're watching it slip out of your hands like that.
I mean, ultimately, that's my problem and why I say the coaches lost this game. They completely changed their play calling that second to last drive, and then they played prevent defense after they decided to call a timeout for Washington. So, I mean, let's get on to another positive time. I mean, Huntley was freaking amazing, and his offense put up 30 points.
Amazing. He put up an incredible, incredible numbers. And just over the last few games, I don't feel like – people recognize that Huntley's been good, but I don't think they recognize just how good he's been. Something I like to calculate is percent of yards allowed, right? So if Michigan gives up 4 yards per carry on a season and you get 5 yards per carry, that's 125% of their yards allowed, right? So over 100, you're better than average. Under 100, you're worse than average. On the season, Huntley is at 113% for his passer rating, 116% for yards per attempt. Over the last three games, that's 139% and 132%, which is pretty close to like Baker Mayfield. Like, it's really, really good. Washington was giving up. Worst game they had was against Stanford. They gave up 7.8 yards per pass attempt to them. Well, Huntley had over 10. He had an incredible game. He was just picking them apart, which goes back to the coaching and not to recognize how amazing of a game he's having. But
however, the coaches cannot coach that. Like, I keep thinking of the one play.
The RPO.
He's running and he's about to get clobbered, and at the last second he turns and throw that pass to the sideline with Moss, and he got another, I think it was 10, 11 yards. Those plays you can't coach, right. And that's why he got the starting job ultimately.
Yeah, and he's doing those things that you look and you say, well, that's the kind of stuff that Johnny Manziel did and Marcus Mariota did. And I know those are big names to be throwing out there, but over the last three games, since the UCLA game, since he's been 100% healthy, that's who he's playing like. And that's not just me, you know, blowing smoke. That's statistically the kinds of performances he's had. To get take the best defense in the Pac-12 on and to get, is it 10.9 yards per attempt? I mean, that's just a bonkers good performance.
Kid's good.
Tyler good. Huntley's going to be on Heisman list next year, and he's earned it.
Ooh.
He is. The run game, however, left a little bit to be desired. Zach Moss didn't have a great day. It's really hard to know if Zach Moss is a hit or miss running back or if just the offensive line is terrible and Washington's a really good run defending team. I kind of give him a pass. He had 3.8 yards per carry, yeah, which isn't bad.
I'm sorry. It's a consistent trend. I think it's the offensive line going against a very good defense.
Yeah.
Not Zach Moss. Zach Moss has showed us glimmers. He's capable. He knows what he's doing. We just need a line that can block for him.
Right, and when he plays a line that our O-line can beat, he has really, really good numbers. I'm looking up his yards per attempt. 6.7 versus UCLA, 5.3 versus Oregon, 7.1 versus USC. When the offensive line wins their contest, Zach Moss is able to make guys miss in the secondary and get a lot of yards.
Yep.
Maybe not quite as explosive as you want, but we've all still got visions of Joe Williams dancing in our head, and you know he was.
I mean, but that's the thing. He's a good player. Hopefully, all the talk of this offensive line gelling more as they play more and getting through spring, because we're only losing one senior. Yeah. So hopefully, you know, there's some hope from next season.
People are talking about gelling and they're talking about learning the scheme, but I honestly think the difference is Paul Tuala. They've started playing Paul Tuala at right guard. They've moved some guys around. They've changed some personnel, and they're better that way. And I think that we've seen enough from the guys who are sort of putatively the starters on the offensive line to say, we need new guys. But what I'm really encouraged by is that Paul Tuala has been so good and is coming back and, you know, is already slotted into one of those starting roles to replace one of these pieces that we've got to figure out. But I'm much more optimistic about the offensive line than I was 3 or 4 weeks ago, but it's not because they're quote-unquote gelling. It's because they've started pulling out the guys who weren't succeeding, trying new players, and having a lot of success. And one last thing, because I saw him, and I wanted to mention it because I keep saying they've got to be trying different guys on the defensive line. Where is he? Where'd he go? He got a sack. Nick Henninger.
Yeah.
He picked up a tackle for a loss. He was out there playing.
He was out there a lot.
Yeah. And yeah. So when we keep saying we need a new mayor, it's nice to see the coaching staff trying new things. But Bradley and I, last three games, just like Huntley, has really come out of his shell. He hasn't had good stats over the whole season. You look at the whole season, he's a mediocre defensive end at best. But the last three games, over two tackles for a loss per game, 0.8 sacks per game, and both of those numbers would be good for top 10 in the country. Now, it's just the last three games, but that includes Washington State, good team.
Yep.
Washington, good team. UCLA is terrible, but he's gotten a lot of these stats against good offensive linemen, and it may be that he's figured it out, that he's said, oh, this is what I need to do to turn this 6'6" frame and these long arms into sacks and tackles for a loss, and now he's doing it. And I'm really
well. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but isn't he just a sophomore?
Yes.
I mean, next year's the year he should have the year.
Yes.
Before his senior season, and I would expect that
he wouldn't have a senior season if he were to if he were to translate back and to have 2.5 Tackles for a loss and a sack a game next year. We're not going to see him for a senior season, but that's okay because we'll probably win the Pac-12 too.
Screw saying just the Pac-12.
Yeah,
where's the national title?
I'm excited.
Let's change our expectations.
I come on Twitter and everybody's doom and gloom and fire Witt and fire Taylor. Not too many people saying fire Taylor, but still. And I'm looking at these stats and I'm saying, this team is going to be really good.
I think we've got a really good team. The question and the problem for me is the offensive line. I'm fine with going through the growing pains of Troy Taylor. I'm fine with Whittingham and most of his coaching decisions. But we need to get that offensive line figured out. If that happens, then everyone in the Pac-12 is in trouble next year because here comes Utah.
Yeah. If they can either find the guys on the roster and it turns out that they're, or if they can go out and they can go find the next Garrett Bowles, the next JUCO tackle who's just ready to go, it's going to be a really, really good season for the Utes because you give Tyler Huntley just a minute, just an extra hair of a second, and he's pretty unstoppable.
Yeah.
And I love what I've seen for the wide receivers over the last few games with Carrington either not 100% or out of the game, and we've had guys emerging just all over the field.
That's been a very pleasant surprise, especially after the beginning of the season when it seemed like
it was just the Darren Carrington show.
Yeah, and Huntley specifically was really looking at Carrington a lot. And then this game it came along, and what do we got? Like 10 different receivers?
3 tight ends.
I mean, that's awesome.
Running backs. It was the ball was all over the field. I felt like watching the game, the cliche game has slowed down for him. He just sort of had a different attitude when he picked up the snap where he would take a step back and take a breath and look rather than, oh, what the heck do I do? Like panicking because he hasn't done it very much. There was just a different quality and sort of a centeredness to the way that he would take the snap. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I am so pumped. Everybody is freaking out. I am so pumped for 2018.
So I'm with you. I will say one more thing about the Washington game that I noticed, and then let's talk some Colorado. But early in the season. Sorry, I just it for a second.
Run over your train of thought.
So early in the season, snaps was such a problem.
Good point.
Low, everywhere, all over the place. In the Washington game, I don't know why I noticed it specifically. They were on point every snap
perfect.
To
every
Huntley.
Snap was perfect.
Like, we've got it, right?
Yeah. Oh, the other thing is 3 penalties for 30 yards.
It's about time.
Remember when there were 11 penalties for 120 yards? I mean,
hold on a second. You're telling me
solved. The team is improving
in November.
Measurable ways. They're playing really well in November. They're losing all their games, but they're playing really well. So that's something. And I honestly think, moving on to Colorado, I think they're going to whoop them. I think it's not going to be a hard game. I think they're going to be pissed. Bulls on the line. They care about those seniors. Tyler Huntley has proven himself to be a great leader. I think 10.5 isn't enough. That's what Vegas says, and I think they're going to win by more than that. I think they're just going to blow them off the field.
I agree with everything you've said except one.
The score.
The win.
Oh, no.
Here's my problem.
No.
Every time Utah has played Colorado with something on the line, they lose. I know that's no stat. But
I just don't believe in that mumbo jumbo, that voodoo.
It hurts me to say it, but I can't go into this game expecting a win. I love Huntley. I think he'll be great. There's no reason he shouldn't excel in this game. But there's just a history, kind of like Whittingham and the month of November the last little while. There's a history to it. And as much as the team's improved this November, they've still lost. And as awesome as Huntley is and the improvement continues, the history still says if something's on the line with Colorado, the Utes are probably going to lose.
And do you think that's because the last two games have been so hard that it's just that they're just drained, or you just think there's magic anti-Colorado juju in the air and it makes it hard to beat them?
I think it's like 75% voodoo doll Colorado, and I think 25% is going to be the cloud hanging over. I mean, I'll say this. If they respond from this Washington game with a win, like, I will praise the leadership of these players and the coaching staff like no other next week when we get together. But I just can't. I can't say I think they're going to win the game.
All right. That's fine.
So I don't know that Colorado needs any other time, does it? I'd like to talk about some basketball.
Yeah.
So
good. It's been surprisingly good. I think we all expected.
Well, let's slow down. I mean, yes, it's been good, but let's look at competition they've played. They haven't played anyone amazing. No hardcore competition. And then they played, Ole Miss. I said Mississippi State earlier. My bad. But they played Ole Miss last night, way late. So I'll admit I did not watch a lot. But I do want to point – there's something we need to point out in regards to Utah basketball, and it's a glaring thing in last night's box score. And let me just scroll on down the box score and look at team turnovers. 16 to 17 assist. And – I don't know if you know basketball that well, Joseph, but that is a really bad assist or turnover ratio.
I don't know basketball that well, but I know it well enough to know that turnovers are not good. It's all about points per possession. It's all about efficiency, and there's nothing less efficient than giving your opponent the ball in a way that makes it likely that they're going to score on a breakaway or get an open look, and that's kind of what it's about. But I will say, people who are saying, oh, they'll clean this up, they won't clean this up. Larry Kraskowiak, bless his heart, is a fantastic basketball coach.
Oh, he's a great coach.
He's a leader of men. He develops NBA talent like virtually nobody else in the entire country. He is not good at coaching his kids to not turn the ball over. The stat that I like to follow is turnovers per possession. So it's a percentage stat. It's how many times you bring the ball down that you lose it.
Let's hear it.
I'm not going to give you percentages, but I'll tell you their rankings in the Larry Kraskowiak era. 2011 to 12, 306th in the country. 12 to 13, 205th. 13, 214th. Then DeLon Wright's senior season, they were 120th. It was their absolute best season ever. Larry Kraskowiak earned in this stat. And they, guess what? Sweet 16? Not Sweet 16 year?
It was either that
year or the year after.
It was the year after, I believe.
But that's their second best year, 188th in the country. They have been worse than 200th in the country every single year in this stat. And you just have to know going in that they are not going to take care of the ball. And that's bad. That's something they really need to work on. If I were Larry, I'd be looking at the stat and I'd say, I'm going to go out and I'm going to hire a ball handling coach.
Well, it's not ball handling.
So tell me what it is.
So it's decision making, right? You're either taking too many risk or – and I'll say right now, like looking at the stats from last night, Cedric Bearfield, we got a problem, dude. Seven turnovers to zero assists, dude. You got the ball in your hand a tons, which is why he has seven turnovers, right? More turnovers, more time the ball's in your hand, which is fine. But you got to take better care of the ball, you know? It's whether it's making a bad decision when teams press, which Utes have traditionally under Larry K also had an issue with that. But it's... I mean, it's ultimately this decision making, knowing where your team is and how the teammates are and how the defense is reacting and reading that. And they're either taking too many risk or they're just not predicting the defense enough.
Is there like an extra pass in the plays that there doesn't need to be? I mean, I know you always you hear the coaches say, take the extra pass, make the extra pass. But isn't there such a thing as not taking the shot when you should?
So, yeah, there's totally making too many passes. You can totally do that. I guess the question for me looking at the percentages that we have up in front of us is what is considered a turnover. So for me, I don't consider a missed shot a turnover, and I'm pretty sure the box score doesn't either. No, so, like, you make that extra pass, it might end up in a worse shot simply because you've ran so much clock down passing the ball. But then again, it's a 30-second shot clock in college ball, so they've got plenty of time. It's something that needs to be improved. Unfortunately, it's something that's shown that will not improve. So, but there's a lot of thing to be excited about. I mean, they dropped a lot of points last night, I think 83 total. And we've got some good shooters between Bearfield and Bibbins. I mean, Bibbins is
playing really well.
He's fun to watch. Yeah. I mean, the kid is constantly moving. Every time I watch him, the kid's running. I'm tired watching him.
He's really tough to stop. And then Donnie Tillman had a great game.
Yeah, he did.
He made some really
good plays. He was practically a starter. I mean,
yeah, he should be. He's playing better than almost anybody. I would say Bibbins is probably the linchpin, and he was the most important part of their win last night. But
the interesting thing to see is going to be as we get into more serious games, or as Chris Kovacic tries to find what he's going to start Pac-12 season with as far as his rotation, we're going to start to see that whittle down a little bit more. And it'll be see who gets the playing time. Because, like you said, Donnie Tillman, he's going to get more playing time. We're going to see other players. Like, I'm interested to see what happens with Gabe Beeler, because he had, like, one amazing night against subpar competition. We go against another P5 team last night, and he had a goose egg. So,
yeah
we're going to see different things happen. And one thing, and this is one thing I've always liked about Larry Kay, is he does not shy away from changing his lineups and playing time. If you earn playing time, you're going to play. If you don't, you're not going to.
And he doesn't seem married to these guys get these many minutes and these guys get these many minutes. It's just you come in and out. I mean, Beeler only had 7 minutes in the Ole Miss game. He only took two shots. I imagine he would have scored some points if he'd been out there more. I haven't heard anything about him being injured or anything like that. I think he just didn't have it and wasn't playing well, and they found better options for the guards.
So, I mean, that's just something to look for. You know, Joseph and I are definitely going to be watching a lot more basketball as the season is going to be shifting. You know, it really ends next weekend or this coming weekend.
We're still here. We're going to be here every week. We're going to start talking basketball and recruiting, and then, I don't know, lacrosse and gymnastics or something in the summer.
We will be doing something. And if by the end of basketball season, maybe we'll get Joseph a little bit more acquainted with the sport.
I've been watching games. I'm starting to learn. I like basketball because of the stats and because there's the sample size of the game are so large because there's so many possessions. So that makes
it's
really,
stat heavy.
Really reliable and predictable in kind of the same way that baseball is, except more predictable game to game because each player is going to touch the ball so many times.
Yeah.
But it's also what makes the game for me less fun to watch because each possession matters a little bit less. Mm-hmm. And then it's only when you get down to those last couple of minutes where there's only 10 or 20 possessions left that it gets really gripping. But I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying learning about it. You guys will have to forgive me if I, you know.
Well educated. It'll be all right.
Okay.
But you're a stats guy. You'll dig that. And I love that you brought that up because our listeners need to know there are algorithms on the internet.
Yes, big, algorithms.
Big formulas.
Big
that decide.
And letters and parentheses.
Exactly. We need people to go review us on iTunes, Google Play. Go find Ute Talk. You've already found it once to subscribe. You're listening now. Go give us a review. If it's not going to be a positive one, please reach out to Joseph and I on Twitter. I'm Grant TBS on Twitter.
I'm Jay Silverswag. You can find us. We're all over the place. And we'd love to change it, make it more fun for you guys. So just let us know what you want to do. And if it's not a terrible idea, we'll do it.
Hey, I'm willing to try terrible ideas. If it's terrible, we'll find out, right?
I guess
but,
so.
I mean, ultimately,
not if you don't review. If you don't review, we won't find out that we're terrible.
Exactly. Or email us. The other way to contact, email utetalk@gmail.com. But that's all we got for this episode. It's been fun, and we'll hopefully be celebrating victory next week when we talk again. Go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email